You're listening to the Restless Wanderer podcast by Paul Coulter, and this is part 38 of a series in John's Gospel. John chapter 18, verse 19. The high priest then questioned Jesus about his disciples and his teaching. Jesus answered him, "I have spoken openly to the world. I have always taught in synagogues and in the temple where all Jews come together. I have said nothing in secret. Why do you ask me? Ask those who have heard me what I said to them. They know what I said." When he had said these things, one of the officers standing by struck Jesus with his hand, saying, "Is that how you answer the high priest?" Jesus answered him, "If what I said is wrong, bear witness about the wrong. But if what I said is right, why do you strike me?" Annas then sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest. Now we'll pause there at verse 24, and simply to say that throughout John's Gospel, we've seen it a number of times that Jesus, or John rather, when he's writing his Gospel, talks about different people who bear testimony to Jesus, and Jesus talks about that idea. The whole book in many ways is built, or many parts of the book are built as a courtroom scene about things that testify to Jesus. And throughout his public ministry, it began with John the Baptist, and then we saw how the Father testifies to him, and the works of Jesus, the miracles testify, and people testify, or fail to, because of course the sad thing is that, as we'll see in a second, and as we saw in the last episode, Peter denies Jesus, fails to testify to him at this point. But here is now the real courtroom scene. Jesus is on trial. And Annas, who, by the way, I said it in the last episode, he and his son-in-law, Caiaphas, they were both high priests, probably not at the same time. Caiaphas was actually the high priest, but Annas had occupied that position as part of the same family. And so the officer says, "Is that how you answer the high priest?" calls Annas the high priest. A little bit like in America or countries like that, when the president retires, he continues to use the title president, even though he's no longer in the position. But look at how Jesus responds. And again, if you can remember back or flick back in your Bible to chapter 12, at the end of chapter 12, you'll see Jesus there talked about how he spoke, how he testified to what is true. And those words would condemn people. But chapter 12, verse 49, he doesn't speak of his own accord, but the Father has commanded him what to say and how to say it. And so whatever he said is what the Father gave him to say. That's what Jesus has done throughout his life and throughout his ministry, only speaking what is true. Only speaking the words the Father gave him, speaking those words in the Father's way as well, because here he is testifying plainly to truth, and he's able to say to Annas, "I haven't said anything in secret. This is not an insurrectionist." That doesn't mean he never spoke in private. Of course, there were things, according to Mark's gospel, that he explained to his apostles, his disciples, when he was alone with them, that he didn't say in public or didn't explain in public. But it's not that in public he said one thing and in private he said a different thing. It's not as if in public he was, you know, speaking all niceness and then in private he was condemning the high priest and the Romans and trying to spark a rebellion. No, his message in public was the same as in private. His person in public was the same as in private. Here is the man, not a man, because no other man has his integrity, the man of complete and utter integrity, utterly trustworthy, utterly reliable, utterly truthful, utterly consistent, utterly honest, the one who says what he thinks and knows and believes. And of course, this jars with the context that he's in, because what the officer who strikes him thinks he ought to be doing is not to speak the truth plainly, but to flatter and take more of a political approach to try and show deference and respect and flattery to the position of Annas and the seniority of Annas. Who does this guy think he is to speak to the high priest this way? Of course, if only they knew who Jesus really was, the one with authority over all authorities, power above every power. We too are called to speak like Jesus, not to be arrogant, not to be disrespectful, but not to fudge or blur the truth because of fear of those who are senior or have authority or power or even power to do us harm. And so when he's struck, Jesus says, if what I've said is wrong, bear witness about the wrong. But if what I said is right, why do you strike me? You see what the issue is here? It's the issue of truth. Jesus knows the truth and he's confident in the truth. And so often in the world that we live in, even I have to say it, in Christian circles, truth is sacrificed. Because people are more concerned with image and reputation and feelings and whether you might have hurt me. Or they assume that whenever there's conflict, there must be fault on both sides. And so instead of trying to get to the truth, they just try and brush over it or ignore it. People don't like confrontation. I certainly don't like confrontation. But the danger then is that the truth is lost. And what Jesus says is, look, if you know some other truth, you testify to it. But I'm not going to change my story because you beat me or hit me, or because the person who's asking me takes a position and a title. Let's read on, verse 25. Now Simon Peter was standing and warming himself, so they said to him, "You are also one of his disciples, are you?" He denied it and said, "I'm not." One of the servants of the high priest, a relative of the man whose ear Peter had cut off, asked, "Did I not see you in the garden with him?" Peter again denied it, and at once a cock crowed. Then they led Jesus from the house of Caiaphas to the governor's headquarters. It was early morning, and they themselves did not enter the governor's headquarters so that they would not be defiled, but could eat the Passover. So Pilate went outside to them and said, "What accusation do you bring against this man?" They answered him, "If this man were not doing evil, we would not have delivered him to you." And Pilate said to them, "Take him yourselves and judge him by your own law." The Jews said to him, "It is not lawful for us to put anyone to death." This was to fulfill the word that Jesus had spoken to show by what kind of death he was going to die. We'll pause there in verse 32. And so here they hand Jesus over. Of course, we don't read about his trial in front of Caiaphas. In verse 19 to 24, he's with Annas. Annas sends him to Caiaphas. The other Gospels give us some insight into that. But verse 28 picks up again and says that they led him from the house of Caiaphas to the governor's headquarters, to the place where Pilate rules from. And it's early morning, and for them, according to their customs, to go into the house of a Gentile, an unclean person in their view, would have defiled them and left them unable to eat the Passover, because it is the day of the Passover. And so they don't go inside, but Pilate has to come out. And instead of making a clear accusation, they say, "Oh, you can trust us, Pilate. We wouldn't be bringing him to you if he wasn't evil." So Pilate says, "Well, then you judge him." And they say, "But no, it's not lawful for us to put him to death." Notice, at least as John records it, they don't say, "Oh, no, we want him put to death. That's why we've brought him." No, they twist it a little bit, don't they? They say, you know, it's not lawful for us to put him to death. So they don't openly say he deserves death, but they're implying it, aren't they? They're pushing in that direction. But it's to fulfill the word Jesus had spoken, verse 32, to show the kind of death. What word? Well, of course, several times in John's Gospel we've had that phrase lifted up. And it's a phrase that in the parlance of the day referred to crucifixion, being lifted up on the cross, up off the ground. but it was also had a double meaning. It could mean to be exalted, lifted up in praise, enthroned. Jesus has spoken about his death. The other Gospels tell us more openly that he talked about being handed over. But let's read on verse 33. So Pilate entered his headquarters again and called Jesus and said to him, "Are you the King of the Jews?" And Jesus answered him, "Do you say this of your own accord, or did others say it to you about me?" Pilate answered, "Am I a Jew? Your own nation and the chief priests have delivered you over to me. What have you done?" Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would have been fighting that I might not be delivered over to the Jews. But my kingdom is not from the world." Then Pilate said to him, "So you are a king?" And Jesus answered, "You say that I'm a king. For this purpose I was born, and for this purpose I have come into the world, to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice." Pilate said to him, "What is truth?" After he had said this, he went back outside to the Jews and told them, "I find no guilt in him, but you have a custom that I should release one man for you to the at the Passover. So do you want me to release you to you, the King of the Jews?" And they cried out again, "Not this man, but Barabbas." Now Barabbas was a robber. The pace of the narrative is increasing, isn't it? This encounter between Jesus and Pilate. And if Jesus' encounter earlier was with the chief priest who was so concerned, or with Annas, who was a former chief priest and part of that ruling family amongst the Jews, and his concern was his own position and his own power and his own authority and his own dignity and his right to be deferred to, so that Annas doesn't even speak to him. In the account that we read, Annas's words at least are not recorded, but the man, the servant, strikes him, the officer strikes him, and says, "That's not how you speak to a high priest." Well, amongst the Jews, they rejected Jesus because he was a threat to their own position. But here with Pilate, the clash is even greater, because Pilate is the ultimate politician. He doesn't know anymore what truth is. He doesn't even know if there is such a thing as truth, or if there is, how anybody can know it. And this is the man who is putting Jesus, who has called himself the truth in chapter 14, verse 6, the way, the truth, and the life. The truth embodied in a person is being put on trial by a man who doesn't even know what the truth is. And so the encounter begins with Pilate asking him, is he the King of the Jews, whether the Jews have made this accusation, or Pilate has heard about what happened just under a week earlier, 5 days earlier, at the triumphal entry, when people shouted out Hosanna or other things that have been said about Jesus. He asks him the question directly. But Jesus doesn't answer him directly. He says, "Do you say this of your own accord, or have others said it?" And then Pilate tries to keep himself away from the detail, doesn't he? "Am I a Jew? You've been handed over by your own nation and the chief priests." And that suggests that the accusation they brought was that he was claiming to be a king. But Pilate asks him, "What have you done?" And Jesus answers, again, not directly, but he talks about the nature of his kingdom. He doesn't deny that he's a king. When Pilate directly asks him again in verse 37, "So you are a king," Jesus says, "You say I'm a king, but I've come to bear witness to the truth." But notice what Jesus says about his kingdom. He doesn't say that his kingdom has no earthly dimension. Sometimes these words of Jesus have been misunderstood to mean that my kingdom is not of the earth, it's of heaven, it's entirely a spiritual reality. But of course, a kingdom that rules over people's lives, it may not have a piece of land on earth that is called the kingdom of God or the kingdom of Jesus. We all live in different nations on earth, don't we? But it does have a physical reality in the lives of those who acknowledge Jesus as king. And therefore, it must have a physical and material and political dimension, because you can't be under the authority of Jesus and vote without asking what way Jesus would want you to vote, or use authority in the way that he would want you to use authority, or use your money and your house and your possessions in the way that he would want you to use them. So Jesus isn't saying that his kingdom is entirely spiritual and not physical. He's talking about where his kingdom derives from. Notice what he says, my kingdom is not of this world. And then at the end of verse 36, my kingdom is not from the world. In other words, my kingdom, the legitimacy of my rule, my authority does not come from the bottom up. It doesn't matter whether the high priest and the other Jewish religious leaders recognize Jesus as king or not. It doesn't matter whether the majority of people recognize him as king or not. Some did, many others didn't, including the crowd that calls for Barabbas to be released rather than Jesus at the end of the chapter. And it doesn't matter whether Pilate and the Roman Empire that he represents recognizes Jesus as king. His kingdom does not come from beneath, from people. He's not the winner of the popularity vote or the general election. And he's not the one who's taken power by force, by gathering the biggest army, or having the most money to pay the most people. No, this kingdom comes from heaven, from above. And that's why it can't be fought for by Jesus' followers. It's a kingdom that must win hearts, that grows as people trust in him and enter into the kingdom. Jesus is a king, but he's not the kind of king that many of the Jewish people were expecting. And he's not the kind of king that Pilate would have been expecting either. And why has Jesus come? He's come simply to bear testimony to the truth. Verse 37. And everyone who is of the truth listens to his voice. We've seen this throughout John's gospel, that the way Jesus speaks about people who come to him is that those who have been given to him by the Father will come to him. And his sheep in chapter 10 hear his voice, including the ones who are not of this fold. In other words, not from the nation of Israel. Hearing his voice, listening to his voice, following his call, that's what happens whenever people are of the truth, belonging to the Father. But Pilate can't hear the voice of Jesus. He doesn't know what truth is. But he doesn't want to put this man to death, and so he goes out to the crowd and says he finds no guilt in him. He's not seeing in this man an insurrectionist, a threat. And in the greatest of ironies, he offers the crowd a choice, presumably thinking that they would set Jesus free and put Barabbas to death. But they choose Barabbas in this custom of setting a prisoner free. Barabbas, who is a robber, or if the footnote is right, an insurrectionist. Barabbas, who was, or at least trying, was a threat, or trying to be a threat to the Roman Empire, is set free by Rome. And Jesus, the true king, who was no threat to the physical power of Rome, is handed over. And here is the tragedy, isn't it? The one who hands himself over to bring salvation to his disciples is misunderstood, not recognized, rejected by those he came to save. Let's read on, chapter 19, verse 1. Then Pilate took Jesus and flogged him, and the soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and put it on his head and arrayed him in a purple robe. They came to him saying, "Hail, King of the Jews," and struck him with their hands. Pilate went out again and said to him, "See, I'm bringing him out to," or said to them, "I'm bringing him out to you that you may know that I find no guilt in him." So Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. Pilate said to them, "Behold the man." When the chief priests and the officers saw him, they cried out, "Crucify him, crucify him." Pilate said to them, "Take him yourselves and crucify him, for I find no guilt in him." The Jews answered him, "We have a law, and according to that law he ought to die, because he has made himself the Son of God." And when Pilate heard this statement, he was even more afraid. He entered his headquarters again and said to Jesus, "Where are you from?" But Jesus gave him no answer. So Pilate said to him, "You will not speak to me. Do you not know that I have authority to release you and authority to crucify you?" And Jesus answered him, "You would have no authority over me at all unless it had been given you from above. Therefore he who delivered me over to you has the greater sin." From then on, Pilate sought to release him, but the Jews cried out, "If you release this man, you are not Caesar's friend. Everyone who makes himself a king opposes Caesar." So when Pilate heard these words, he brought Jesus out and sat down on the judgment seat at a place called the Stone Pavement, and in Aramaic, Gabbatha. Now it was the day of preparation of the Passover. It was about the sixth hour. He said to the Jews, "Behold your king." And then they cried out, "Away with him, away with him, crucify him." Pilate said to them, "Shall I crucify your king?" The chief priests answered, "We have no king but Caesar." So he delivered him over to them to be crucified. Here is this tragic figure of Pilate. Three times in chapter 18 and 19, Pilate says, "I find no guilt in him." Three times, just as Peter had denied Jesus three times, so Pilate speaks the truth. Pilate, the man who doesn't know what the truth is, speaks the truth about Jesus. Chapter 18, verse 39, "I find no guilt in him." Chapter 19, verse 4, "See, I'm bringing him out to you so that you may know that I find no guilt in him." And again, verse 6, "Take him yourselves and crucify him, for I find no guilt in him." But despite the fact that he could see that Jesus was innocent, and despite the fact that he was afraid whenever they said that he calls himself the Son of God, because what Pilate has seen in him makes him wonder, could it be true? Might he be the Son of God? Or in Pilate's worldview, presumably as a Roman, not so much the son of the God of Israel, but the son of one of the gods, a demigod, like the great heroes of the myths. And so Pilate is afraid that he might be about to be involved in the killing of a son of the gods. But despite that fear, despite the truth that he can see, he does what someone who doesn't really know the value of truth does. He bows to the pressure because of his fear that that he would get in trouble, perhaps from his superiors, because if this man really is an insurrectionist and he sets him free, or that the Jews might cause a revolt and a riot, as they were known to do. And Pilate had form, according to history. He'd been involved in a brutal put down of a rebellion before this, and was probably walking on a knife edge, feeling threatened by the Jewish leaders, feeling vulnerable from above if he messed things up. And so what does he do? Well, he hands Jesus over. Hands him over to them to be crucified. There's a lot of handing over in these chapters. Jesus is handed over by Judas to the high priest. He's handed over by the high priest to Pilate. And he's handed over by Pilate to the people who have paid for Jesus' blood. It will be Roman soldiers who put him to death. But Pilate tries to absolve himself of responsibility and to say that it's they who have chosen it, despite the fact that he finds no fault. Of course, it doesn't work, does it? That kind of political positioning where you try and absolve yourself of guilt and try to present yourself as one who is blameless because circumstances forced you or you had no choice. Jesus stands out as the one who testifies to the truth, the one who is prepared to suffer and die because of truth. But Pilate is like all of us, isn't he? When it comes to the bit, self-preservation, again, just as it did for Peter who denies Jesus, as it did in a worse way for Judas, who betrayed him. Self-preservation leads us to compromise on what is true and right. And this is the sin for which Jesus has come to atone. But notice what Jesus says in verse 11. You would have no authority over me unless it had been given you from above. Therefore, he who delivered me over to you has the greater sin, whether that's speaking about Judas or the high priest Caiaphas. It doesn't really matter. He's saying that the Jewish people who rejected Jesus should have known better than the Romans. Their sin is greater because they had greater knowledge, a greater revelation from God. They knew that the Messiah would be coming, and they knew what the Old Testament said about the signs of his coming, and they saw the miracles of Jesus, and they heard the words of Jesus. But because he didn't fit their preconceptions, they reject the truth. And it doesn't say that Pilate is not sinning. It's not letting Pilate off the hook, but he, as a Gentile, didn't share the same responsibility. But notice the first part of that verse. Here is Jesus speaking again about his kingdom, the kingdom that is from above. All authority on earth comes from above. Here is the biblical perspective, a divine perspective on human authorities. No one can have authority on earth unless it's given to him or her from above, from God. That carries through in Romans 13 and in 1 Peter chapter 2 when the apostles talk about the authority of those who are in power. They recognize that it's a God-ordained authority and that our role is to submit to that authority as long as it doesn't clash with obedience to God. That's what Jesus does too. He sets the example. But he gives us a perspective on history and on power that is so different from the world that we live in. Here is the one who lays down power, who doesn't play the game, who doesn't twist and manipulate and promote self and preserve self like so many. And like me and my flesh and my sinful nature, and like you in some aspects of who you are, and if you don't do it, you know the temptation to do it. But this is the divine Christ-like pattern. It's the pattern that we're called to follow in, to make ourselves nothing, to serve, to bow, as Jesus did back in chapter 13, to wash the feet of others, to lay aside power, and to testify to the truth of God's power and authority, even to those who think that they have authority, to let them know that there is a king, and that king is Jesus, and that they must enter into his kingdom by admitting their sin, whether they feel it's great or less, by trusting in him. Is Jesus your king? Affirm that if he is. Turn to him if he's not. For his sake and for God's glory. Amen.